KALW.
I just had never met a Jewish person before who didn't necessarily support Israel as like a political entity. He was one of the first people I knew who actually like made a case for Palestinians.
Today marks the one-year anniversary of Hamas's terrorist attack on Israel and a year of Israel's deadly response in Gaza.
I started seeing stuff on social media. I didn't understand much about what's going on in Israel, like, at all.
We'll hear how one Bay Area Jewish teenager is trying to make sense of generations of conflict. Then, how should artists respond when destruction and death are streamed daily to our phones?
We wanted a space where people could cry, could rage, could sing and dance.
Making sense and making art to meet the moment. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today is the one-year anniversary of Hamas's deadly attack on Israel that killed 1,200 people, and today marks a year of ongoing devastating Israeli attacks on Gaza, killing 40,000 people, displacing 90% of its population. Over the past 12 months, there were only 8 days without bombardment. And with nearby Lebanon now also engulfed in conflict, the threat of an expanded regional war is at an all-time high. The numbers are staggering, and with so much death and destruction coming into our feeds through social media, it's almost impossible to wrap our minds around it all. So today we're bringing the focus down to more personal perspectives. If you're a teenager and you're growing up in all of this, it's not just confusing, but it's overwhelming. First today, we'll hear from a San Mateo High School senior re-examining what Israel means to young Jewish people. It's the latest episode of TBH. Here are their hosts.
This is TBH. I'm Amalia Madrid Lilly, a senior at Oakland Technical High School, and your host for today's episode. This podcast is made by, about, and for teenagers, and for anybody else who wants to hear what's on our minds.
And I'm Anthara Gangwal, a senior at Leland High School in San Jose, and your other host for this season of TBH. We've covered a lot so far, from climate issues to teen dating violence, from being a first-time voter to advocating for LGBTQ+ rights in schools. And now we're on the second-to-last episode. What's this one about?
So today's episode is about the effects of the war in Palestine on the Jewish community. And we're here with TBH producer Jeremy Straws, a senior at Hillsdale High School in San Mateo. Hey, Jeremy.
Hi, Amalia.
What happened on October 7th has created such a divide among people here in the Bay Area and across the country. A lot of people think the issues might affect the outcome of the upcoming election.
Yeah. We talked to Leila Ali, an activist with the Palestinian Youth Movement. She thinks Kamala Harris can't win without doing at least one thing.
These people have not been representing our voice. The people stand with Palestine. We've had 7 unions sign a letter to Biden to end all aid to Israel, representing 6 million people. Labor stands with Palestine. We have healthcare workers standing with Palestine. And Kamala Harris, who is the presumed nominee, can not expect to become president unless she corrects this, unless she ends all aid to Israel.
It's such a complex situation for people across many identities. Jeremy, you're Jewish, and you grew up hearing that Israel is the holy land for Jewish people. How has the war in Gaza made you feel?
Well, as a Jewish teen, I felt like I've had to hide this part of my identity. I also feel uncomfortable whenever the topic gets brought up because from what I've seen online, Israel's the bad guy.
So how do you make sense of it, and where do you go for support?
My family's been really supportive of me. They've provided a lot of guidance. They've helped me understand more about my Jewish heritage and identity, especially after the war began.
Okay, let's hear more about his experience as a Jewish teen in these times.
How do they know anyone's athletic
ability? Can't stack it for Maddie? I don't think she cared.
This is my family, the Straws's. We're from San Mateo, California. There's 19 of us, including 3 dogs. When we're together, we can get loud.
No, if you take out Kamala, if it's not Kamala.
always assume you're going to
I know. She's raised $28 million in buying my nails today, which made me.
Every Sunday night, we pile into my grandma's house for a huge family dinner.
What's for dinner, Simpson?
Chicken and broccoli and cauliflower and salad and rice and two kinds of bread and blueberry cobbler. Sound good?
I love celebrating my Jewish heritage with my family. As a kid, I spent my life going to temple, celebrating Shabbat, and going to sleepaway camp. But October 7th changed a lot.
This is AP News Minute. The militant Hamas rulers of the Gaza Strip carried out an unprecedented multi-front attack on Israel Saturday, firing thousands of rockets and infiltrating the
citizens of Israel. We are at war, not in an operation or in rounds, but at war.
People I knew from camp, people my sisters knew from camp, would be fighting in a war for who knows how long. Although Israel is far away, the war has had an impact on Jewish people in the Bay Area. I'm at Peninsula Temple Beth El's Shabbat. After service, we have oneg, which is when we eat dessert. While people eat their challah cookies, I ask how the war has affected them.
I think it's caused there to be more controversy among Jewish people.
Well, it's definitely had an impact. It has stirred up a lot of, you know, people's feelings that have probably been suppressed for a long time.
It has caused us to examine who we are and what we represent and what matters. And it's an enormous, enormous change. It has divided us. It has united us. It has troubled us. It has awakened us.
Growing up, I was taught that Israel was a place in the Middle East, the birthplace and home of Jewish people. In Hebrew school, I was taught that Israel was given back to the Jewish people after World War II. Going on social media, I would see posts on how Israel is this terrible place, and I started to question whether I was taught the right things or if I'm on the right side of history. So, I wanted to know how it affected other Jewish people. Lev Zeiger is a junior at Los Altos High School.
Like, with such a, the devastation of October 7th, I started seeing stuff on social media, like, right away, and it made me really curious what was going on, because I didn't understand much about what's going on in Israel, like, at all.
When Lev started to ask questions, he began to understand much more.
Then there's the Palestinian people, whether they're Jewish Palestinians, Christian Palestinians, Muslim Palestinians, because there are Christian and Jewish Palestinians who are already living in what was Palestine before 1948 that were deported from their land that they'd been living in for generations.
The more Lev found out, the more overwhelmed he became.
And I was overwhelmed by, like, the brutal collective punishment that Palestinians were facing for the actions of one political group.
But through it, he found his voice and decided to organize a school walkout to protest the actions in Gaza.
Palestinians in Gaza have been living for decades under military occupation by Israel, severely limiting access to education, jobs, and even food and health care. This has been happening continuously for longer than we have been alive.
We were chanting for the safety of Jews and Muslims. It was a very, like, bipartisan, like, very, like, everyone deserves safety and well-being kind of, like, messaging, and that was met by really intense backlash.
Backlash from other Jewish people, like verbal threats, violent text, and even physical encounters.
People have asked people on opposing teams to hurt me in basketball games, in school basketball games, because I'm a bad person. Or I've had cars swerved at me. So I think that there's this, like, wildly problematic conflation between anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism and Judaism and Zionism.
And this conflation is exactly what worries other young Jewish people. When the encampments popped up, some were scared.
It's a chant heard before at City Hall, protests, marches, and now here at San Francisco State University's campus.
Protesters have now camped out in Harvard Yard. As you see here, tents, groups of people gathering, despite the fact that the school is restricting access to that area. This is now the fourth student encampment.
DePaul students are in their second day of encampment. The tents are a violation of university policy, but they've been allowed to stay. Organizers say so far it's been peaceful, but there have been confrontations here. DePaul students and faculty are demanding the university cut ties with Israel and end study abroad programs with Israel. They say they've made their demands known for a year, but don't believe the message was received.
Here at home, students at San Francisco State have set up a so-called ceasefire.
Maddox Eckerling is a junior at San Francisco State, where he's experienced anti-Semitism firsthand.
There was the most recent incident, which happened like 3 days before I left campus. Someone put graffiti a very anti-Semitic viewpoint.
The graffiti said, "Death to Zionist, all Jews are Zionist." But even before October 7th, Maddox saw disturbing things.
So there was someone on campus who dressed up in Nazi paraphernalia, like attire.
Maddox called the Hillel staff for help. Hillel is an organization that helps college kids stay connected to Judaism.
And we were on the phone for a bit, and I sort of like broke down. And then when I sort of calmed down and got off the phone with them, I packed a bag, I got in my car, and I drove home.
For Maddox, he didn't want to say anything about the conflict in Gaza, but his peers made assumptions.
It was, I don't even know if it's still an organization or not, it was just one of the political organizations that was working against the tuition hikes at the beginning of the semester.
After October 7th, the organization became a pro-Palestinian group.
On October 7th, and all of them started sort of accusing me of, you know, being this ugly Zionist and, you know, wanting to ignore me and not talk to me and whatever because of it.
While Maddox has been accused of being a Zionist, Alice Rothschild, a health council member for Jewish Force for Peace, has been accused of being anti-Semitic. She was going to give a lecture on the health and human rights consequences of the war on Gaza.
You know, I mean, I was a couple of months ago on a speaking tour in the Northeast.
She was supposed to speak at Dartmouth at the medical school.
No, I was postponed indefinitely. And then I was supposed to speak at Harvard Medical School, and I was canceled at two different locations.
These big-name institutions didn't let her talk about the health and human rights of Gaza because it was seen as controversial.
I was accused of being an anti-Semite, and I was told that they couldn't guarantee my safety.
Danielle Courtney is a sophomore at the University of Sussex, but like me, she's from San Mateo. And this topic has been controversial at home. She's close to her family, and usually they agree on politics.
Like, typically we agree on all politics. This is like the one place where we don't agree, but like, it's not like I think this and you think that. It's just kind of like we have like the same core morals. We just kind of differ in like how we think is like the best approach.
It all started while she was at a Jewish summer camp during her senior year of high school. Her perspective on Israel began to change when she started talking with the fellow counselor in training.
I just had never met a Jewish person before who like didn't necessarily like support or like agree with or like believe in like Israel as like a political entity. And so it was just really interesting to like hear his perspective. And he just would talk about like the injustices that the state has committed. And like he was one of the first people I knew who actually like made a case for Palestinians.
Danielle says that social media also played a big factor because she's able to see different views.
I think that our generation has just been given like unbridled access to so much information.
But social media can also make things worse.
And so like, I think that's kind of like a common issue with social media is like, people will have good intentions, but like, it's just so easy to like misconstrue things and like end up being unproductive.
Social media plays a significant role in shaping public view, but leads to misunderstandings. And it was really confusing for me. But talking with other Jewish people has made me feel more comfortable with this topic. Now I see things that I never saw before. There's a lot of history fueling the conflict. In seventh grade, I had an English teacher who showed us an episode of The Twilight Zone every Friday. Eye of the Beholder is one that I remember vividly. The episode was pretty gory and mind-bending, but the message behind it is what I remember the most. By the end of the episode, the audience learns something that changes the entire plotline. I think it's important to look at all sides of the story. Looking at every perspective will give you the most complete picture, much like in the Eye of the Beholder.
Thanks, Jeremy. I believe it's critical to foster open dialogue regarding this conflict. This war has touched the lives and identities of so many people, and hearing a variety of perspectives is so impactful. Next week, we'll be airing our final story for this season of TBH.
And it just so happens that it's your story, Amalia.
That's next time on TBH. Stay tuned. You've been listening to TBH, a podcast from KALW Public Radio. The feature you heard in this episode was produced by Jeremy Strauss.
It was edited by True Gwen, who taught in the program along with Sarah Lai Sterlin. Ava Richards is our production assistant. Our artwork was created by Awan Mance.
James Rollins and Tarek Fuda are our engineers. Shireen Adel is our supervising editor. Ben Trefney is our executive producer. This project was made possible with support from the California Arts Council, California Humanities, Silicon Valley Community Foundation, and Association for Continuing Education. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Amalia Madrid-Lilly, along with Anthra Gungwal.
That was episode 5 of the latest season of TBH, our podcast made by, about, and for teenagers. We're playing new episodes every Monday. Next Monday will be our final episode. Find that story and all of our past seasons at kalw.org/TBH. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. In moments like this, many artists are asking, how do you make art, dance, or perform in the face of live-streamed atrocities? In 1963, after the release of her song, Mississippi Goddam, musician Nina Simone offered one answer.
An artist's duty, as far as I'm concerned, is to reflect the times. I choose to reflect the times and the situations in which I find myself. That, to me, is my duty.
That's what a group of Bay Area dancers did earlier this year with a 14-hour marathon event of learning, performance, and solidarity. Reporter Lina Nagia Basuni brings us their story in this piece from March.
At 9 a.m., Styles Alexander pulls up to Counterpulse, a performance and event space smack dab in the Tenderloin. The sidewalk is covered in blood. Styles was told that someone had fallen and bled out on the street.
In a way, it was painfully metaphorical for what we're doing here. Just to be literally cleaning blood as we're trying to sort of clean up the blood that our nation has made with our hands.
We're outside the event, Artists Against Genocide. It's a marathon of performances, teach-ins, and actions in solidarity with the people of Palestine, Sudan, and the Congo. Styles is an artist and dancer and calls themselves the instigator of the event.
The question of what does our art do in these moments, like in a moment like this, a moment of televised genocide, it made me ask, what is the purpose?
I've been asking myself the same question. How can I create anything when right now I don't even know how I'm supposed to put one foot in front of the other? As an Arab, I cannot separate myself from these atrocities. Every day I visit countless graves as all our phone screens become cemeteries for the more than 30,000 Palestinians who have been killed. Styles, like me, forgot how to make art. But then they talked with other artists and had a realization.
We came to this conclusion that, you know, artists are actually the first responders in so many ways.
In thinking about how to respond, Styles and their community started talking not just about Palestine, but also the thousands and thousands killed in Sudan and the Congo.
So for me, it was less about what can performance do as much as it was like, what else do I have? What else do I have?
Styles glides me through the corridors. There are three floors with films and sound baths, phone banking and food, poetry and performance workshops.
Yo, one, give me a second. 1, 2, 3, 4.
That's Redessa Jones. As founder of the Medea Project, she leads storytelling workshops for incarcerated women.
Dancing.
Dancing.
Is defined as any movement.
Today, she's on the stage at Counterpulse, teaching us the first step to making art in times of trouble. Speak, she says, as a chorus.
I believe that liberation is within our reach and revolution is at our throat.
Another organizer, Chibuese Crouch, reads a poem as a tight circle gathers round her.
I believe.
I am a bird.
I am a bird.
I dream.
I dream.
And it's a...
Together, the chorus speaks as they point their fingers high to the sky. It reminds me of how I was taught to bear witness. My family raises their fingers just like that when they pray.
Dance, for me, is prayer.
Like Styles, my family taught me prayer and dance were done better together. Today, it seems dreaming and praying and witnessing share the same meaning. As I listen to the chorus, the voices sound like a flock, and I imagine the words of Palestinian poet Marwan Mahoul. He says, in order for me to write poetry that isn't political, I must listen to the birds. And in order for me to hear the birds, the warplanes must be silent. But the warplanes aren't silent right now. I ask the question again, can you dance? Should you dance? Styles says in this moment, if the first step for artists is to use art to connect, step two is don't dance to escape.
People don't want to see a bunch of people just performing and dancing around when people are dying. We wanted a space where people could cry and could rage and could sing and dance and just be still and be quiet and eat and break bread together.
So, we're speaking as a chorus and we're not dancing to escape.
And we are in one of the most well-documented genocides. They will wipe.
That's Sharif Zakut from the Arab Resource and Organizing Center, a featured speaker of the teach-in.
Literally, we are seeing play-by-play on cell phones, people we are hearing from. And with over 30,000 people dead, over a third of them children, over 7,000 people who have left unaccounted for, suspected to be killed under rubble.
In this talk, he shows me what step three is. Ground your art in education. He emphasizes how worldwide struggles are interconnected. Even educators know that in times of atrocity, in order to endure, we need to pause and offer up prayer.
I dream.
I dream.
And it's a beautiful.
My mother taught me to pray and dance in the same breath, how to move my body not just in bursts of joy, but also to carry me through waves of grief. Maybe the key to making art in times of trouble is not to let go, but to hold on tighter. If artists are, like Styles says, the first responders, then maybe a day like this one is the antiseptic in their first aid kit. A day filled with presence, connection, and education. a day which draws on the possibility evoked by performance. It makes way to see the wound, to know what is needed to heal. In San Francisco, I'm Lena Bassuni for Cross Current.
Lena reported that story in March as a fellow in KALW's Audio Academy, our tuition-free training program that teaches how to tell sound-rich stories. Find more of her work at kalw.org/crosscurrents. Tune in tomorrow morning at 11. For some survivors of fire, terrible memories linger, and so do vulnerabilities around their homes.
She had all of that lumber all stacked against her siding, and it's really old and really combustible.
Preparing for future wildfires, tomorrow morning at 11. Today's Cross Currents team includes Yosmai Del Maso, Anthony Ivey, Aaron Lim, James Rowlands, Gonady Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Molly Blair Salyer, Shireen Adil, Hanisha Herjani, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.